From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 335, recorded live Thursday, August 30th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePak.com. In this episode, Scott Hunter talks with Rowan Miller from the Entity Framework team about the recent EFV5 release.
Hi, this is Scott Hunter. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Hanselman is still lost out in the world on vacation somewhere, and so I'm still filling in for him today. And today I have with me Rowan Miller from the Entity Framework team.
Hi, so as Scott said, my name is Rowan Miller. I'm a program manager on the Entity Framework team here at Microsoft. Been on Entity Framework team for about 4 years now. Moved from Australia to the US to work on the team. Started off as a tester on the team and have been a program manager for about 2.5 years now.
So Rowan, we just shipped .NET 4.5, Visual Studio 2012. Can you kind of tell us what, if I'm a developer writing database applications, what's new in Entity Framework this time around?
So this release is Entity Framework 5, which introduces quite a few cool new features if you're a developer. First up, we have support for enums. Now, you could use enums in your model before, but it was quite hacky, so we now have native support for enums within Entity Framework. We also introduced support for spatial data types. Now, these are akin to like the geography and geometry data types inside SQL Server, but they're also part of our provider model, so they can work on other database providers as well. In addition to that, we have some awesome performance improvements coming. We saw up to a 67% performance improvement in an end-to-end application that we run here at Microsoft. Obviously, the stats that you get are going to differ depending on your application, but that's some pretty serious performance improvements. The EF Designer also has some cool new features in it. You can map to table value functions in your database, also known as TVFs. We have support for multiple diagrams and a whole new UI to match the look and feel of Visual Studio. And we also introduced some performance or some improvements to help map to store procedures from the EF Designer.
So I've been using EF for a couple of years now, and I used it back all the way back in .NET 3.5 when it was actually pretty hard to use. Has EF gotten easier to use over the last couple of years? I mean, I remember back when I first started playing with the framework, trying to get access to things like foreign keys and stuff was pretty complicated. So for people out there that have not tried EF before, or tried it at one point, it was a little too complicated. Can you tell us about, is it easier to use now?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's quite interesting seeing what's happened with the EF team over the years. At the moment, we actually have a lot of people who were developers outside of Microsoft and then joined Microsoft from backgrounds where they were using ORMs to access data in real-world applications. And that's seen quite a significant change in Entity Framework. We've focused very much on providing APIs that are simple and intuitive to use. We're focused on real-world scenarios, looking at what our customers are doing. So you'll see quite a remarked difference, particularly in the last few releases of EF. A lot of improvements in usability of the framework. In addition to that, I guess some of the pain points we've seen, you mentioned foreign keys. So we now, of course, expose foreign keys in the model, which allows you to manipulate them. We saw a lot of folks like the designer, they like working over an XML file using boxes and lines. But a lot of folks want to just write code. We're developers, we know how to write code, we know how to review code in our code reviews, we know how to resolve merge conflicts with code in our source control systems. And so we introduced the alternative of code first, where the model isn't stored in XML, but is calculated at runtime based on the code that you write.
So you're saying that when I write an application with EF now, I don't have to drag a database into like a visual designer or draw a bunch of boxes and stuff in the designer. I can actually just write my own classes and start using my classes. My classes somehow become my database?
Yeah, so with Code First, you basically have two options. If you're someone who has an existing database or you're a developer who wants to start by hand coding the database, that's fine, and you can write code to map to it. This is kind of akin to the database first workflow that we had in the designer, where you have your database and then you reverse engineer a model off it. And we have some tools to help you reverse engineer some code that will map to that database, or you can hand write it. Alternatively, if you just want to write your model, then we can actually generate the database for you. And this is where CodeFirst really comes powerful. Now, that scares a lot of folks. They're like, I'm just going to write some classes and it's going to magically calculate my database. Is that something my DBA is going to like? Am I going to have the control I need? Can I get the performance that I need? And the answer is actually yes. With CodeFirst, you have a lot of control over the shape of the database. And especially with CodeFirst migrations, we give you even more control and the ability even to drop down to raw SQL to define the shape of the database when needed.
So if I'm in this CodeFirst model and I'm writing my own classes, how does, let's say I've got a product table and I want to have categories and suppliers, which are foreign tables that actually relate to my product class. How do I model that? How does CodeFirst know relationships like that? How does it know how to like generate my primary key? How do you do those kinds of things?
So CodeFirst, we're trying to follow this pattern called convention over configuration. So we have a whole bunch of conventions that will try and interpret the shape of your model based on the classes. So one example is you mentioned primary keys. So if I have a product class, if I have a property in there called product ID, then we'll automatically detect that that's the primary key. If it's of type integer, then we'll automatically configure it to be an identity column in the database too, meaning the database values will be generated on insert. When we get to relationships, say a product belongs to a category, well, you simply define your category class and then add a property to your product that points to that category class. Then we'll calculate that there must be a relationship and we'll create the foreign key constraint in the database for you. Now, like I said, it's convention over configuration. So, of course, if the conventions don't work for you, say you might have a person class and it has a primary key called social security number, we're not going to pick that up by convention, but you have some options for configuring that. The easiest one just being to put a data annotation on there. That's the key data annotation.
Interesting. So, another question. I know that when I write programs and stuff, I start off with some classes and mock my application out a little bit, but I always don't know what all the fields are going to be in my class until my application, kind of starts coming into shape. So, for example, I might start with some object that has like four or five fields in it, and then I decide to add two more fields with it. This sounds kind of scary to me because how are you going to keep the database and my class in sync? My fear would be if I went down this model, I'm going to add a couple fields to my database. Do I have to like delete my database every single time I run my application? How do I solve those problems?
It's a great question, and one to start with CodeFirst, we didn't have a great answer to. In EF 4.1, the answer was you either had to manually update the database, at which point you lose a lot of the benefits of CodeFirst, or you had to use this thing called a database initializer, which would drop and recreate the database every time you change the model. Now, obviously, that's not ideal but feasible on your development environment, but when it comes time to deploy your application, that's a horrible option. So in EF 4.3, we introduced this thing called CodeFirst Migrations. Now, migrations isn't anything new. It's not earth-shattering and something our team came up with. Migrations gives a way of writing some code that expresses how to upgrade and downgrade your database. So you have a set of ordered, well-known steps that express in code how to add properties to the model, or in turn, how to add columns into the tables in the database. And then to downgrade as well, it knows how to drop those on the way back down. One thing that's a bit different with migrations for CodeFirst, we can actually scaffold out the contents of the migration. Because we know what the model looks like, and we know what it looked like last time you updated the database, we can detect anything that you've added or removed or changed in the model, and then we can scaffold some code for you that you can then look at and run, or you can edit if you want to.
Interesting. So you're basically saying I can start with my class, I run my application, and my database gets automatically generated by Energy Framework with my class. And then I have a mechanism where I can go back and add a few more fields and run a step. And you're going to take the field that I added and automatically generate a C# class or a VB class that contains the code that would take my database up to that step. That sounds great. Lets me keep in sync with my local database. But what about the scenario where I have version 1 of my products? I hand it to my customers, they buy it, they're running in their data centers, And then I start working on version 2, and I add a bunch of more fields, and we get version 2. How do they update their remote servers? I mean, I understand the development story where I can keep my local database in sync, but do we have a mechanism to, how do you do this with remote servers? How do you do this with your, on team development, for example?
So the great thing about having a well-known ordered set of migrations is we actually record in the database when these are applied. So this is similar to other migration frameworks out there. We have a table that records which migrations have been applied to the database. So in a team environment, I may find that one of my fellow coworkers has gone and added 3 or 4 new migrations. Now I have, say, 20 previous ones already applied to my database. When I pull down his changes from source control, I run migrations, and migrations sees that I already have a whole bunch of migrations applied, but I'm missing the 6 latest ones. So we'll take the 6 latest ones and apply them to my database. Now, the same mechanism can be used when you get to deployment, and it's what we'd recommend. But in some situations, having that extra table in the database isn't going to be okay, or having an application or some code from your local machine update the database isn't going to be okay either. This is obviously true when you have a DBA in the mix. So one of the things that we have in migrations is the ability to create a raw SQL script which can be used to apply the migrations. So you just tell us what migrations you want a script for. So you might say go from version 2 to 4, and we'll generate a script to do that migration for you. The script can then be handed off to a DBA to be run in test environments, to be verified, and then eventually run in production.
Interesting. So this kind of reminds me of Active Record on Ruby. So how does this compare or contrast to that? Did you guys take inspiration from that, or did we copy that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so like I said, migrations isn't anything new. Ruby on Rails is one example of a product that's done code-based migrations. There's like Fluent Migrator and a whole bunch of other ones out there that take a pretty similar approach. So when we got to this problem, we looked at it, we looked at a whole bunch of options and decided that the way the community is already approaching the problem is the right way to do it at the moment. That having code to go up and down is sensible, it's easy, it works well in team environments, and it's easy for these deployment scenarios that we talked about. So to that extent, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel, but we did add some value in that when you're using Entity Framework, you have this model that you're aware of. So it doesn't make sense to make some changes in your model and then have to go and hand code those changes in a migration as well, which is where this add migration, scaffold my changes for me, and then let me review and or edit those before I actually run them.
Interesting. That brings up another point that I think is interesting in the whole migration standpoint. I remember you guys released a preview almost like a year ago of migrations. It was very different than the migrations today. I think my reaction to it was it was like automatic. It was too automatic. It was like every time I ran my application, the database just automatically synchronized with my database. And can you tell us how you started down that path and how you ended up with the more code-based model? What drove that? Was it customers? Was it what feedback?
So that first prototype that we released kind of came from this. We were playing around inside Microsoft trying to work out, you know, should we do something similar to what's been done many times before in the community? Should we look at some of the things we already have inside Microsoft that can do this database migration? Can we reuse some of that? And to start with, we started going down that path, being like, we have some components here that can do database migration already. So we looked at using those. It became very clear from the feedback in that first preview that our customers didn't like the path we were going down. And one thing we've been very careful to do in Entity Framework, we use this slogan, release early, release often. And that allows us to, basically in this instance, we threw away all the work we did and started again from scratch, building what our customers were asking for. Plus, obviously we don't want to just do what's already been done before. We wanted to take the power of Entity Framework, the learnings that our team have, the extra things that are possible when you have a model, and apply those to the problem space as well.
So this must mean EF must be working a lot differently than it did back in the past. I remember back in the 3.5 framework days when there was a lot of disgruntlement in the community that we were not listening to what the customers wanted, what the community wanted. So it sounds like you guys are working completely different than you worked 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with the EF 4.1 release, we started doing previews very early. We were releasing, in the late stages of releasing migrations, we were actually releasing a preview every 4 weeks. And these are very lightweight previews. We were literally just taking a build of what was checked into our source control system and publishing it on NuGet. So a few things have made that possible. One is having a nice, easy deployment mechanism like NuGet, where we can quickly and easily ship not just previews, but actual releases in between releases of the .NET framework and Visual Studio. Interestingly, too, in those early stages of EF, obviously at the start of a project, there's a lot of legwork done to get a core framework up and running. So our team is executing very agilely now. We're listening a lot to our customers. We're able to deliver fun new features very quickly. But that all builds on the foundation that was laid at the start. So while we definitely could have done a much better job of listening to customers at the start, that time spent building a solid framework that can handle a whole bunch of queries and some really complex mapping is paying off today because it allows us to deliver features quickly and easily.
I think it's great to hear that more and more teams at Microsoft are being more transparent and more open and moving to that model. I know the ASP.NET team, which I work on, is spends a lot of time doing the same thing. Now, when I think of EF, I think of something else too, which is interesting. If I'm a new customer, this is kind of a common Microsoft problem, and I'm probably guilty of creating some of this myself. But I'm really curious what your guys' thoughts are on this. I'm a brand new customer. I installed Visual Studio 2012, and I build a new project. Man, there's a lot of ways to create a database. One of the ways is I can right-click in my project, and I can add an entity framework model. And it lets me design from a designer, or I can like drag an existing database in, or I've got this code first model. Is there any guidance from Microsoft on what should I be doing? If I'm a new customer, which of these models should I be using to develop, and what choices should I make? Why would I choose one over the other? What's the pros and cons? Is the designer going to go away, for example? I mean, it sounds like all I'm hearing is, we're doing all this great code first work. We've got this great migration work. And I'll ask the even harder question. If I'm in the designer and I add something, is there a way to have it do a migration? So just curious to hear what your thoughts are around these areas.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the past, we haven't done a very good job of communicating this. And it's something we've tried to really, be very clear about in the EF5 release. And to start with, no, the design is not going anywhere. So fundamentally...
Not going anywhere as in we're not working on it anymore, or not going anywhere and we're not going to remove it?
Not going anywhere as in we're not going to remove it. It's here to stay. It's a very valid workflow. So
are we going to add new features to it?
Yeah. So I was just going to say, EF5, we actually added a bunch of new features to it. In fact, if you look at the feature list for EF5, we added enums and spatial. Now, they work in both the designer and code first. Apart from that, most of the new features were actually for the designer. So multiple diagrams, table value functions are only available through the designer. They haven't been added to code first yet.
Okay, so I'm still confused on when I should use the designer, when I should use code first. Is there any guidance from Microsoft on what choices should I make and when should I make those choices? Because that's the hardest part about Microsoft products is we release new stuff every couple of years and all the old stuff is still there and there's always five ways to do something. And I think I know I always hear from our community that, God, there's five ways to do this and nobody wants to tell me which one is the right way to do it. So I've got you, the subject matter expert. What should I do?
All right. So two questions are going to help you work out the right one. So first question, something totally outside of your control. Existing database that a DBA has created or I've created in the past, or do I have a new database, i.e. my greenfield empty database I want to add tables to, or do I not even have a database yet? Am I happy for something to create the database for me? The next question, totally up to you, totally inside your control. And it's really simply boils down to, do you want to use boxes and lines in a designer, or do you want to just write code? And then that basically leaves us with four boxes to fill in if we put those things in a grid. If I want to use the designer and target an existing database, that's called database first. If I want to use the designer and target a new database, that's called model first. The second column's a bit confusing, and this is code first. Code first, although it sounds like it's all about new databases, it can actually either target an existing database or create a new database for you. So we kind of talked about new database already. On that side, I define some classes, I possibly add some configuration, and then it generates a database for me. The other option is to map to an existing database, either by handwriting the code or by downloading the Entity Framework power tools and using those to reverse engineer a code-first model for me. Now that brings up one set of questions. That's four different options, and there's no like single entry point for those. So one thing we're looking at for the next release of Entity Framework is when I right-click Add New Entity Data Model inside my application, which has traditionally been the entry point for Entity Framework, is trying to include all of those four options in that single dialog so that we're giving our users one single place to go to help make the right decision for their application. Now, we actually have that, or a spec of this feature, up on our Codeplex site. So if you go to entityframework.codeplex.com and you look under the Documentation tab, you'll find a link there to a bunch of feature specifications. And in there, you'll see the tooling consolidation spec, which is where we start talking about what that dialogue's going to look like and how it helps customers make the right decision.
So entityframework.codeplex.com, that's kind of interesting. Isn't Codeplex where like source code releases and stuff like that are supposed to be up there? And also it's kind of interesting to hear that you guys are you're putting your specs online before you even ship something. This seems like a change.
Yeah, so this is just one more step along the continuum of being more open as a development team. So this isn't just specs before we release features. This is actually specs before we even start working on features. So we literally haven't even started working on this dialogue yet, but the spec is up there and public, and we'd love your feedback on it. And we don't just want your feedback as a token gesture. We're seeing in all the releases of Entity Framework, like, customer feedback is having huge impact on the actual product that we ship. We saw this in Code First, where the API looks nothing like it did to start with, and in migrations, again, like you said, the whole paradigm for migrations changed completely from the first release. Now, Codeplex is where open source code goes, and Entity Framework is open source these days. It's under an Apache 2 license, and we are actively working on features there. It's not just a toss over the wall, here's the code that we shipped. This is, we are actually working on the next version of Entity Framework in the open source code base on Codeplex.
So you're saying that I can go to entityframework.codeplex.com right now, download the source code for Entity Framework version. I'll have to ask you what version. And I can build and use that today?
Yeah, absolutely. So our team is currently working on Entity Framework 6. So we shipped EF5 a couple of weeks back. And so now our focus is shifting towards the features for EF6. And you can go download the source code, build it, test it out. And you can actually test out some of the new features. So some that are already checked in. In EF6, we're introducing asynchronous support. So you can both query and save changes asynchronously using Entity Framework. That feature is checked in. You can go look at our unit tests and see how it works. We're introducing some new patterns for dependency injection. Again, you can go look at our unit tests, download the code, try it out. We've done some work so that you can store models from two code-first models in a single database. That's something that didn't work in EF5, but we've already enabled it in EF6.
Interesting. So EF6, what is that all about? Is there a roadmap somewhere? Is there a list of features? What if I want to have my feature? I want to, you know, have some crazy feature that I think should be in EF6. Where would I go and give the feedback that I want my feature to be in EF6? And also, do you guys have a time frame?
Yeah, so all great questions. So entityframework.codeplex.com is the place to go if you want to log a feature request. If you've hit a bug that you want us to fix, go and log it there. Alternatively, if you have a bug that you've hit or you want a feature that is something that our team isn't planning to implement, then we're actually accepting contributions, and we've taken 3 contributions already from the community. So one example, someone wanted an interface put on object context, which our team wasn't really planning to do. It wasn't super high priority, but we actually checked in the contribution earlier this week for that change. There is a roadmap up on there too. So if you want to see what our team is planning to do, again, if you go to the documentation tab on the Codeplex site, you'll see a roadmap link there, which will tell you all the features we're planning to do. And I'll plug a couple while we're here, things that people ask for all the time. Store procedure support in Code First, it's coming. And the ability to customize the conventions that Code First uses, that's coming also.
So this is interesting. You know, once again, I know ASP.NET, my team, open sourced our libraries, some of our libraries earlier this year. I'm curious, if I'm a corporate customer listening on the podcast today, now that you're open source, does that mean that do I get the same support? How does that work? It just, can you kind of explain to everybody and what, how does this change the world for NDD Framework customers? Is NDD Framework only going to be released on CodePlex in the future, or is it still going to be like a Microsoft release?
So that's a great question and something we spent a lot of time working out inside Microsoft before we made this move. So it doesn't change anything to the way Entity Framework is released. Entity Framework is a fully supported, fully tested, signed by Microsoft, released by Microsoft with a Microsoft license and full Microsoft support. The only thing that changes is the way that we develop the product. So we're now open source, you can see what we're doing, you can test it out, you can even jump in and get on board with the development process. Bear in mind, if you want to submit code to Entity Framework, you're going to be held to exactly the same guidelines, testing standards, and everything that we use internally. So, same high-quality bar for development, but you can get involved in the development process, and when it comes time to ship, no changes to the way it was before.
Interesting. So, basically it sounds like Microsoft is still the gate for all changes that occur in the Entity Framework. It's not just free-for-all.
Yeah, that's correct. That is one difference in some open source projects. As far as like the administrators of the project, the people who can submit to the core code base, the people who can do the final code reviews, that is still the Entity Framework team here at Microsoft.
Another interesting question, now that you guys are open sourcing this Entity Framework 6, the .NET framework ships with Entity Framework 4.5 in it today. How is this EF6 going to work with the Entity Framework in the framework 4.5. When I download Entity Framework 6, does it replace the one in my framework? And also how would I migrate as well? I mean, if it doesn't replace it, how would I migrate to the new one? So can you help us out with that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Entity Framework is definitely in a slightly confusing state at the moment. So Entity Framework 5, we always
a slightly confusing state. I love the confidence there.
Yeah, so we tried to make it less confusing just by being very clear about the way we talk about things. So when we talk about Entity Framework 5, we're talking about the NuGet package that ships on NuGet. Now, that's not quite true because Entity Framework 5 is actually basically three pieces. One, it's the NuGet package that ships on NuGet.org. It's also some components that are still in the .NET framework from the earlier days when Entity Framework was part of the .NET framework. In addition to that, we also have the tooling, which is part of Visual Studio. So moving forward, the way it's going to work, the NuGet package is still primarily Entity Framework. But what we're actually doing is taking the components out of the .NET framework and putting them into the NuGet package. Now, just to clarify that, the components are still going to be in the .NET framework because they have to be there for backwards compatibility, right? Folks still need those classes inside .NET so that if their application depends on them, they're still there. But if you're just using the NuGet package, then with these components moved out, we can do newer, bigger features without having to update the .NET framework. So for example, in EF5, to do the enums feature, we had to update components in the NuGet package, but our query pipeline, our mapping and metadata sections, they're all inside .NET, so we had to release .NET 4.5 to be able to support enums, which also means if you download EF5 and you're targeting .NET 4, you can still use EF5, but you don't get the enum feature. In EF6, that restriction goes away. We can do all these features without revving the .NET framework. And in fact, things like enums and the spatial data will actually start working on .NET 4.
So interesting. So as we move to EF6, you're going to basically give people using, sounds like you're going to target both .NET 4 and .NET 4.5 for EF6. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And our aim is to make every possible feature work on both .NET 4.5 and .NET 4. Now, we're still looking into things like async, which is largely a .NET 4.5 feature, whether we can actually enable that on .NET 4 or not, but where possible, everything will work back to .NET 4.
Okay, so I've got EF6 on my machine, and I've already got my application written using EF 4.5 in the box, or EF5. How do I make the switch? How do I convert over?
So back in the EF 4.1 release, we introduced a simplified API surface, that is the DB context API. Now this was like a stripped down, more efficient version of object context, which has been around since the start of Entity Framework. DB context and the code first components as well. Now, I want to be clear, DB context isn't just the code first. And in fact, in Visual Studio 2012, if you create a new model with a designer, you'll get the DB context API surface by default. But DB context and code first have always been in the NuGet package and have never been included in the .NET framework. So if you are only using the DB context API, then you can seamlessly upgrade to EF6 just by installing the EF6 NuGet package and everything will just work. Now, if you happen to be using object context, or if you're using the DB context API, but dropping down to the object context API at times, then you'll need to change some namespaces. We've kept the API surface looking the same, but to avoid type conflicts with the types that are in the .NET framework, we've put them in a new namespace. So basically to upgrade, in 99% of cases, if you're using DB context, nothing to do. If you are using object context, you'll probably have to go and change some using statements.
Awesome. So it sounds like it's the upgraded model's not too bad, and I can run both side by side in some cases, I guess?
Yeah, that's actually one great thing about not being in the framework. Not only we're not in the framework, we're also not in the GAC, which means we've been deployed everywhere. So you can have, you know, you can open one solution that's using EF5, you can open another solution using EF6. And because there's no central source for EF on the box, those two apps can happily run side by side.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today and talking to us about all the great new features that sounds like are coming in EF6 and some of the features that we actually built in EF5.
Thanks, Scott. That's great. And I just want to give you one resource. If you want to know anything about Entity Framework, then you want to head to msdn.com/data/EF. Done a lot of work to the site, including a bunch of videos to help you get started with Entity Framework.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to this episode of Hanselman Minutes. Next week, Scott Hanselman should be back.